continue today with the excerpts from Ringing Cedars book series, book number 5, chapter 15, titled They're Capable of Changing the World. Why is it, Anastasia, that every time you speak of your forebears, you always speak about mothers, about women? As for men, your forefathers, I hardly hear anything. It's as though the fathers in your line were all insignificant. Or maybe your genetic code or your raid doesn't allow you to feel your male ancestors. Isn't that a bit insulting towards your forefathers?
I can feel and see the deeds of my forefathers, just as I can my foremothers, when I want to. But I am far from being able to understand all their deeds, or to determine their significance for the present day, for me and everyone else.
Tell me at least about one of your forefathers whose deeds you don't fully comprehend. As a woman, you find it harder to understand them. It'll be easier for me, seeing that I'm a man, if I understand them, then I can help you.
Yes, yes, of course. I shall tell you about my forefather, who was able not only to discern, but also to produce living substances of a power greater than all the weapons known, either today or in the future. Nothing manufactured could ever withstand them. They are capable of changing the earthly world, of destroying galaxies, or even creating whole new worlds.
You must be joking. Where are these gadgets today?
Any man living on the earth today is capable of producing it, provided he can understand and can feel. My forefather revealed part of the mystery to Egyptian priests. Even today, earthly rulers in their political states govern according to the system and mechanism established by those priests. But now, there is less and less understanding of the meaning and the mechanism of government. This mechanism was not perfected, and has become degraded over the centuries.
Hold on a minute there. You're saying that today's presidents rule their countries according to a system or directions worked out by the priests of ancient Egypt?
Since that time, Vladimir, nobody has ever contributed anything significant of their own to the system of government. And today's earthly states have no conscious awareness of how the government of human society works.
Now that's simply too hard to believe. Can you try taking me through the whole step by step?
I shall try taking you through it all, step by step, and you shall try to understand. Tens of thousands of years ago, before the world witnessed the grandeur of Egypt, when no state like that yet existed, human society was divided into a multitude of tribes. My forefather and foremother's family lived apart from human society. They lived according to their own laws. They were surrounded in their glade by everything as it was back in their pristine origins, as in paradise. My foremother, a beauty herself, had two sons. One of them was the orb of day, which as it rose into the sky, awakened everything to life. The other was her chosen one. She was always up first. She bathed in the stream and warmed herself in the rising sun. The light of joy was something she always shared with everything around. And she waited. She waited for him to awaken, her loved one. As he awoke, she caught his first glance. When their glances met, it was as though everything around them fell into a trance. Love and trembling, comfort and ecstasy were excitedly taken in by the space around them. The day passed by in joyful duties, and each time the sun began sinking towards sunset, my forefather always watched thoughtfully. And then he sang. My foremother listened to his singing with hidden ecstasy in her heart. Back then, she did not yet understand how the words interwoven into the song were forming a new image, an extraordinary image. More and more often, she felt like hearing about it, and as though feeling my foremother's desire, my forefather sang about it again and again, and each time he sang, he outlined the unusual features more and more distinctly. The invisible image came to dwell among them. One morning, upon awakening, my forefather did not encounter the glance of love that he usually did. He was not surprised. He quietly rose and headed into the forest. In a secluded spot, he caught sight of my foremother, enfolded in silence. She was standing there all by herself, leaning against a cedar tree. Enfolded in silence, she felt my forefather put his hands on her shoulders. She kept her moist eyes lowered, and instead of raising them to look at him, he lightly touched a tear running down her cheek and said tenderly to her,
"I know. You're thinking about it, my beloved. You're thinking about it, and you are not to blame for that. The image I created is invisible. It is invisible, but you love it more than you love me. You are not to blame for that, my beloved. I'm going away. I'm going away now among the people. I have been able to discern how splendid images are created. I should tell the people about that. What I know, others can know too. And the splendid images will lead people into the pristine garden. There is nothing more powerful in the universe than the substance of living images. The image I created has proved itself even stronger than your love for me. Now I shall be able to create grand images, and these images will serve people."
My foremother's shoulders trembled, and a trembling voice whispered,
"But why? You, my beloved, have created an image which I love. It is invisible. But you, who are visible, are going to leaving me? Our child is already staring within me. What shall I tell him about his father?"
"The splendid images will create a splendid world. Our son will picture to himself, as he grows, the images of his father. If I am to become worthy of the images pictured by my son, then my son will recognize me. If I am not worthy of his conception, I shall stay on the sidelines so as not to interfere with his aspiration to dream the splendid dream."
Incomprehensibly to my foremother, my forefather went away. He came to the people. He came with a grand discovery enthralled. He came for the sake of his future sons and daughters, in an aspiration to create a splendid world for all.
We now present you with chapter 16, An Extraordinary Power.
It transpired in those days that the tribes of people living on the earth engaged in frequent frays, and every tribe planned to raise as many warriors as it could. And among the warriors, any that aspired to the culture of the land or the culture of poetry were looked down upon. And each tribe had its priests who essayed to make the people afraid. But none of them had any clear goal. They simply found solace in each other's fear. And each one flattered his own pride by telling himself he was receiving from God more of something than his fellows.
My forefather managed to assemble a group of poets and priests from a number of different tribes. There were 19 in all, 11 poet singers, 7 priests, and my forefather. They got together in a deserted, isolated spot. The singers sat with meek faces to one side, while the priests took their places with a show of pride. My forefather addressed them as follows: "The tribes can be made to cease their enmity in war, and all the peoples will then come to live in a single state. They will have a single just ruler, and every family will be saved from the horrors of war. People will start to offer each other and help, and the brotherhood of people will find their way to the garden of their pristine origins." At first, the priest simply laughed at my forefather, telling him he was daft. Who will voluntarily surrender his power and authority to another? If all tribes are to come together, one of them must become the strongest and overcome the others. And here you conceive of there being no more war. Your words are too naive to ponder. Why have you gathered us together, you slow-witted wanderer? And the priest began to leave. But my forefather stopped them by saying,
"You are wise man, and your wisdom is needed to make laws for human society. I can give each of you such a power that no weapon made by man can withstand. If you cherish it and you use it for good trust, it will help everyone reach their goal, come to the truth, to a brighter sunrise that is blissful and grand. But if its possessor lusts in his soul to fight others with an evil intent, he himself would perish.
This reference to extraordinary power arrested those priests in their tracks, whereupon the high priest proposed to my father.
If you know of such an extraordinary power, tell us about it. And if this power actually works and is capable of creating whole states, you will stay and live with us in that state. Together, we shall create laws for human society.
This was precisely why I came to see you, to tell you about the extraordinary power. But first, I would ask you to nominate a ruler from among all those known to you, a ruler who is kind, whose mind is free from greed, who lives with his family in love, and as to war, has not a single thought thereof.
The high priest mentioned to my forefather in reply that there was indeed a ruler who had studiously avoided all contentions, but his tribe was small in terms of numbers, and since there was no tendency to glorify its warriors, this was something few among them aspired to become. And so to avoid conflicts, they were often required to change their base and move on, abandon a place that was more suitable for living, and settle in a less favorable space. This ruler's name was Egypt.
Then Egypt, the state shall be called, my forefather said. I shall now sing you three songs. You, my dear poets, shall sing these songs to people in all different tribes. And you, my dear priests, shall settle yourselves among the people of Egypt. Families from all over will be drawn to you, and you shall greet them with good laws.
Whereupon my forefather sang three songs to those gathered. In the first song, he formed the image of a just ruler, calling him Egypt. The second song conveyed the image of a happy people living together in harmony. In the third song was the image of a loving family with happy children, fathers, and mothers residing in this extraordinary state. The songs were made up of ordinary words, already familiar to everyone, but the words were combined in such a way as to cause their listeners to hang on to each new combination with bated breath. And then there was a captivating melody in the resonant voice of my forefather. It beckoned and called and fascinated and created living images. At that time, there was still no outward Egyptian state. Its temples had not yet been built, but my forefather could tell that it would all come about as a result of the calling of man's thought and dream melding into one. And my forefather was enthralling in his song, inspired by the extraordinary power with which our grand creator has endued us all. He sang as one who possessed this power, a power that distinguishes man from everything else, that gives man dominion over all, that allows man to be recognized not only as the son of God, but as a creator too.
Now fervent with inspiration of their own, the poet-singers sang these three songs amongst the various tribes. The people were fascinated by the splendid images created and came from all over to dwell with the tribe of Egypt. Just 5 years later, out of this very small tribe, the state of Egypt was born. All the other tribes, which had earlier wanted themselves above their neighbors, simply fell apart. And there was nothing the war-inclined rulers could do to stop it. Their authority weakened and disappeared completely. They were defeated by something, but there was no war. Accustomed to material conflicts, they had no idea of the power the images held over all, images that delighted people's souls and fascinated their hearts. In the face of but a single image, provided it is genuine and untainted by mercenary interests, all the armed troops of the earth are useless, whether they carry spears or any other deadly weapons. Before this image, all warriors fall to the ground, powerless. The Egyptian state grew and increased in strength. Its ruler was dubbed Pharaoh by the priests. Ensconced in their temples, away from the everyday bustle of mankind, they made laws which even the ruling Pharaoh was obliged to follow. And every ordinary citizen was only too glad to carry them out, and each one aspired to live his life in conformity with the image.
My forefather lived among the high priests in the main temple. For 19 years, the priests paid heed to him. They aspired to study the supreme science of all sciences, to learn how to create grand images. My forefather was inspired with the best of intentions and sincerely endeavored to explain everything to them. Whether they understood it fully or only in part is no longer clear. And it does not really matter that much.
Then one day, after 19 years, the high priest called a meeting of his inner circle of priests. They filed into the main temple with solemn dignity, a temple which even the pharaoh was not allowed to enter.
The high priest took his place on the throne, while all the rest sat at his feet. My father smiled as he sat there among those priests. He was immersed deeply in thought, composing yet another song, either creating a new image or perhaps rejuvenating an old one. The high priest addressed the gathering as follows.
We have learned a grand science indeed, one that allows us to rule all the world. But in order to perpetuate our reign, we must ensure that not one grain of it goes beyond these walls. Now we must create our own tongue and communicate exclusively in it amongst ourselves, lest any of us let something slip, even by chance. Over the ages, we shall circulate among the people a multitude of treatises, at which everyone may marvel, and think that it has all been set forth. And we shall set forth a multitude of marvelous sciences and various discoveries in such a way that both the rulers and the common people will move further and further away from what is important. And so that wise men in the centuries to come may amaze others with their sagacious treatises and sciences. Moving further and further away from what is important themselves, they will lead others in the same direction.
So be it.
There is one question requiring our urgent attention. Over the past 19 years, we have learned how images are created. Any one of us is now capable of creating an image that can change the world, destroy or strengthen a state. And yet, the secret of the power itself has never been revealed. Can any of you tell me why the images each of us creates vary in power? And in terms of time, why does it take us so long? In the meantime, there is in our midst one who is capable of creating images very rapidly, and the power of these images remains unsurpassed. For 19 years now, he has been teaching us, but there remains much that he has yet to tell. Now we must realize that we are not all equal among ourselves. It matters not who holds what rank among us. But everyone should know that there is one among us who holds the power to control in concealment, unseen, in his sway. With power of the images, he's capable of creating, he can elevate or slay. One among us is capable of deciding the fate of nation states. I, as high priest, am empowered to alter the balance of power. The doors of the temple wherein we sit are closed. A loyal guard stands outside the door and will open it to no one except on my command.
The high priest rose from his throne and with heavy steps, striking his scepter against the stone slabs of the floor, headed towards my forefather. In the middle of the hall, he suddenly halted and addressed my forefather.
Now you shall choose one of two paths. Here is the first. You shall now reveal before us all what you have concealed, the secret behind the power of your images. You shall tell us how and by what means they are created, and then you shall be proclaimed a priest second only to me, and upon my departure you shall become first. All living people will bow before you. But if you do not reveal your secret to us, a second path will be yours. It leads only to that door.
Whereupon the high priest pointed to the door leading out of the temple hall into the tower, in which there were no windows nor supplementary exterior doors. This high tower with smooth walls did have an exterior platform up above, from where, on an appointed day once a year, my forefather or some other priest would sing to an assembled crowd.
You shall go in through that door and never come out of it. I shall command the door to be walled up, leaving only a small opening through which you will receive a daily minimum of food. When the time comes for people to gather by the tower, you shall go out to greet them from the platform up above. You shall go out, only you shall not sing nor create any images. You shall go out so that the crowd will see you, and not become concerned or spread rumors surrounding your disappearance. You shall be allowed to greet the people with words only. If you should dare sing a song to create images, even a single song, you shall be deprived of food and water 3 days long. For two songs, you shall not receive food or water 6 days long, which means you will be decreeing your own death. Now, decide and tell us clearly which of these two paths you have chosen.
My forefather now calmly rose from his place. His face betrayed neither fear nor rebuke. Only a sense of sorrow lay gently on his furrowed brow. As he made his way past the priests sitting in his row, he looked each one of them in the eye, and in each pair of eyes he beheld the thirst for knowledge. But not only the thirst for knowledge, greed itself glared at him from each pair of eyes. Then my forefather went up close to the high priest and stared him in the eye. The gray-haired high priest, in turn, did not take his eyes off my forefather, eyes which likewise burned with greed. Striking his scepter against the stone floor, he sternly repeated to my forefather's face, saliva foaming in his mouth.
Hurry up and decide. Which of the two paths is your choice?
My forefather's voice betrayed no fear as he calmly replied.
Perhaps it is the will of fate, but I choose a path and a half.
How can you choose a path and a half? Do you aim to make fun of me and of all those who are currently in the great temple?
My forefather went over to the tower door, then turned and replied to all.
Believe me, I would not even think of making fun of you or offending you. At your will, I shall enter into the tower for good. But before I go, I shall reveal to you the secret as best I can. And I know that it is not my reply that will bring me the second path. That is how it turns out that my choice is a path and a half.
So tell us, do not halt or waste time. Where is the answer to the secret? Keep it from us no longer, they begged.
It is an egg.
An egg? What egg? What are you talking about? Out with it.
All hen's eggs will bring forth a hen's chicken. A duck's egg will give birth to a duckling. An eagle's egg will bring an eagle to the world. Whatever you feel yourselves to be, that is what you will bring forth.
I feel. I am a creator. Tell us how to create the image that is stronger than all the rest.
That is not the truth. You yourself do not believe what you are saying.
How can you know what power of faith I have?
One who creates will never bring himself to entreat. One who creates is capable of giving himself. You, on the other hand, are one who entreats, which means you are already well within the shell of unbelief.
My forefather went through the door, which at once shut behind him. Later, following the high priest's order, the entrance was walled up. Once a day, my forefather was handed food through a small opening. The rations were meager, and he was not always given enough water. As the day approached, when the throngs of people were to gather before the tower to hear new tales and songs, for 3 days my forefather was allowed no food, only water. That was the order of the high priest, a change from his original decree. He gave this new order so that my forefather would become weak and not be able to sing any new creative songs to the crowd. When the multitude of people gathered in front of the tower, my forefather went out to greet them from the platform above. He gave the waiting throng a cheerful look. As to what happened to him, he breathed not a word. He simply sang. His voice rang forth in a song of rejoicing, and an extraordinary image was born. The people who had gathered to hear him paid close attention. Directly he finished his song, he began a new one. The singer stood and sang from his high platform the whole day long. As the day drew to close, he announced to the whole throng, "With the new dawn, you will hear new songs." On the following day, he sang again. The people were unaware that the singer, imprisoned as he was in the tower, was no longer even being given water by the priests.
Listening to Anastasia's account of her distant forefather, I wanted to hear at least one of these songs he sang, and I asked, "Anastasia, if you can reproduce in such detail like that all the scenes from the life of your forebears, couldn't you sing a song too? The song your forefather sang to the people from their tower?"
"I can hear all these songs myself, but a full and accurate translation of them is impossible. Many of the words simply do not exist in today's language, and many of the words used back then have a different meaning now. Not only that, but it is difficult to reproduce the poetic rhythms of that time in the word combinations we have today."
"Pity. I very much wanted to hear those songs."
"You shall hear them, Vladimir. They will rise again."
"What do you mean, they'll rise again? You just said a translation is impossible."
"A full and accurate translation, yes, is impossible. But it is possible to create new songs with the same spirit and with the same meaning. Bards are creating them right now, using words familiar to everyone today. The final song my forefather sang back then, you have already heard."
"Heard? Where did I hear it? When?"
"A bard from Yegorovsk sent it to you."
"He sent me a lot of songs."
"Yes, he did. But one of them is very similar to my forefather's final song."
"But how could that have happened?"
"Times have their own continuity, Vladimir."
"So what kind of song is it? What words does it contain?"
"You will understand in just a moment. I shall explain everything in order."
This is continuation of Vladimir's book number 5, chapter 17, When Fathers Will Understand.
On the third day, my forefather once more climbed up to the platform with the dawn. He stood there, smiling, looking at the throng of people. He was looking for something specific in the crowd. Itinerant singers waved at him in greeting and raised their instruments, and their strings vibrated under the singers' inspired hands. My forefather kept smiling at them, while at the same time he scanned the crowd even more carefully. My forefather wanted to see his son, to see the son born to his loved one 19 years earlier in the forest. Suddenly, out of the crowd, he heard a resounding young voice.
"Tell me, O great poet and master of this song. You're standing up there, high above everyone else. I am down here. But why do you seem so close to me, as though you were my father?"
And the dialogue was heard by all around.
"I am 19 years old, and I have not seen my father even once. I live with my mother alone in the forest. My father left us before I was born."
"First, tell me, young man, how do you see the world around you?"
"The world is splendid, with its rosy dawn and setting sun drawing the day to a close. Marvelous and multifaceted it is. But people are crossly preventing the beauty of the earth and causing each other to suffer."
"Perhaps your father left you because he was ashamed before you, ashamed of the world into which he brought you. Your father left, aiming to make the world a more splendid place for you."
"And so, did my father believe that he would be able to make over the world all by himself?"
"The day will come when all fathers will understand that they are the ones given the responsibility for the world in which their children live. The day will come when every father will face the fact that before bringing his beloved child into this world, he must act to make the world a happier place. And you, as well, must give thought to the world in which your offspring will live. Tell me, young man, how soon is your chosen girl to give birth to the one which she has conceived?
In the forest where I live, I have no chosen girl. The world there is splendid. I have a host of friends, but I still have not yet met a girl who is willing to go with me into my world, a world I cannot leave.
Well then, even if you have not seen your chosen girl so fine, you still have a space of time to make the world into at least a little more joyful place for your future girl or boy.
I shall devote myself to that, just like my father.
You are no longer a growing lad. You have flowing within you the blood of a fine young man, a future poet, a master of song. Sing to the throng about your splendid world. Come, you and I together shall join in song. We shall sing along together of the splendid world of the future.
Who can sing when your own voice is so resounding, O poet and master of the song?
I tell you, young man, you shall be able to sing the way as well. I shall sing for the first line. The second is your verse. Only sing out boldly. And as I have told you, my poet.
When fathers will understand.
My forefathers sang from the high tower over the heads of the assembled throng. The voice soared forth with rejoicing. Out came the line.
I arise and adorn smiles, befriending.
And from the throng standing below, all at once a pure and resonant voice, not yet self-confident, carried on.
I walk miles and the birds sing above.
And after each line of the fathers came that of the son, and sometimes their voices blended as one, and a resonant song of joy resounded all around.
And this day will have never an ending, because evermore deeply
at that point, the young man found his confidence and with rank ecstasy sang on.
Along the sun road, with light footsteps stealing, I enter my father's own ground. My eyes see but my feet have no feeling. My happiness knows no bounds. I remember my seeing the soul once before time. The flowers, the trees, and the sky. But then I could see only pain and misfortune. But now you are everywhere nigh. It's all the same. Bright stars above and the birdies
But I look at them differently now. I have no more sorrow. I feel no more hurtings. I love all you people. I love all you people.
The voice from the tower grew fainter and fainter, and before long could not be heard at all. The singer in the tower momentarily lost his balance, but quickly regained it, and smiled at the people once more. And right up to the end, he noticed how his son's voice was even stronger than before, the voice of his son, now master of the song, standing below in the throne. When the song ended, my forefather, from his position on the tower platform, waved farewell to the throng. To conceal himself from human eyes, he descended 5 steps on the staircase inside the tower from the platform doorway. He was becoming weaker and losing consciousness, but he perked up his hearing to the limit. From the wind, he could just catch the words fervently whispered to the young singer by a young and beautiful girl.
Allow me, young man, allow me. I shall follow you. I shall go with you into your splendid world.
There on the stone steps of the walled-up tower, my forefather was fast losing consciousness. He had a smile on his face as he awaited death. With his last breath, his lips whispered,
"The line will continue. You will find bliss in a circle of happy children, my beloved."
My foremother heard him in her heart. Over the thousands of years to come, poet after poet would repeat the words of the song of my 2 forefathers. And the words and phrases of that song were reborn, all by themselves, among poets of various times and lands. They have sounded forth in many tongues. These simple words conveyed truth, and they broke through artifice and dogma. And now once again they are here today. Whoever deciphers their lines, not with the mind but with the heart, we'll learn great wisdom.
And was there some sort of special meaning in the other songs your forefather sang from the tower? Why would he give his life just for some songs?
My forefather, Vladimir, created many images in his songs. They later built a state and maintained it for a long time. But it was these songs that helped the priests, the descendants of those first priests, to create a multitude of religions and take power in different lands. But there was just one thing the priests did not know. When they decided to use their power for selfish ends, the priests did not know how to make the images work for them in perpetuity. The images lost their power when the priests tried to subject them to their own selfish pride. The ones...
Hold on there, Anastasia. There's something I fail to understand about these images.
Forgive me, Vladimir, for my lack of clarity. Now I shall try to let go, pull myself together, and tell you all in its proper order about the most important of all sciences. The science of imagery, it is called. All our ancient and modern sciences are derived from it. The priests split it up into parts so to conceal the most important thing, in an effort to maintain their power over everything on earth in perpetuity, passing on their knowledge of it to their descendants in underground temples by word of mouth. And they try to preserve the secret with such zeal that their modern-day priest descendants have been afforded only a tiny fraction of that science. But back then, when it all began, things were going considerably better for the priesthood.
And just how did it all begin? Tell me everything right from the start.
Yes, yes, of course. I somehow got excited once more. I must tell you everything in order. The conscious awareness of this powerful science began with the songs resounding forth from the tower.